Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
What does the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints say about the Journal of Discourses? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me to discuss this question is my colleague, Eric Johnson. We have begun looking at the Journal of Discourses, a collection of 26 volumes of sermons given by Mormon leaders during the 19th century. Yesterday, I read you an email from a lay member of the church explaining what he thought the Journal of Discourses actually was all about and included. But today, we are going to look at a statement that is found on LDS.org, the official website of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And if you want to look it up, all you have to do is just go to LDS.org and type in Journal of Discourses, and I'm sure the statement that we are going to examine today will pop right up. Go ahead, Eric. Why don't you read that first paragraph?
It says, the Journal of Discourses is not an official publication of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It is a compilation of sermons and other materials from the early years of the church, which were transcribed and then published. It included some doctrinal instruction, but also practical teaching, some of which is speculative in nature, and some of which is only of historical interest.
So it sounds to me like they're trying to downplay the significance of this 26-volume set and give you the impression that it's not all that important.
Well, it takes away the credibility by saying it's not an official publication right off the bat.
Well, what does that even mean? What does it mean that it's not an official publication? Is it a publication of the church at all? Now, I've read in one place where they try to say it wasn't even a church publication at all. However, I'm holding in my hand the 1989 to 1990 Church Almanac, which is produced by Deseret News, which is owned by the LDS Church. On page 187, it has a list of what it calls church publications. And it lists on this list, and I'll just give you a few because there is, of course, a lot, the Evening and Morning Star, the LDS Messenger and Advocate, the Times and Seasons, the Millennial Star, the Seer. I was kind of surprised by that, but no, that's accurate because Brigham Young did commission Orson Pratt to do the Seer. What else is listed among with BYU Studies, the Church News, the Friend Magazine, the Ensign Magazine, Liahona Magazine? What is listed among that list? The Journal of Discourses. Why is it listed among all those prominent publications?
Wasn't it also printed on church press?
It was. It was printed on a church press, and also we find that Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th president of the Mormon Church, who was a part of the church historian's office for about 50 years, if I understand correctly, he wrote a book called Essentials in Church History, and in the back, in an appendix, you can start on page 673, it says Church Publications, and listed in these church publications, we find the Book of Mormon, the Evening and Morning Star, Book of Commandments, 1833, Messenger and Advocate, Doctrines and Covenants, Elders' Journal, Millennial Star, Gospel Reflector, The Wasp, The Nauvoo Neighbor, The New York Messenger. Going on down the list, what do we find? The Journal of Discourses. So Joseph Fielding Smith, church historian, before he became the 10th president of the Mormon Church, obviously felt that it was a church publication.
Some of the criticisms that some of the Mormon apologists are giving to us about this is that, I think they're creating a straw man by saying, well, the Journal of Discourses is not scripture. It's not one of the standard works. But we've never said it is a standard work, and I think that's a poor excuse.
No, the standard works, and we're going to talk about this because we're going to go through the prefaces in some of the volumes. And there is in Volume 8, it does say, George Q. Cannon, who was a member of the First Presidency, did say that this volume stands out as one of the standard works. I don't think he was implying that it was supposed to be accepted on a par with the Bible, the Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, and Pearl of Great Price. But he does give it prominence by giving it that title, a standard work. What does that really mean? I'm sure in the context it meant to him that it was something worthy of note and that you need to pay attention to this. I am not saying, maybe other Christians have misstated that and erroneously given it that kind of significance. I personally wouldn't. I would merely say that George Q. Cannon obviously felt that what was in that volume was worthy of reading and probably worthy of believing. When they say some of which is speculative in nature.
In fact, they use the word some three times in that. Some doctrinal instruction, some of which is speculative, some of which is of historical interest. That word some sticks out like a sore thumb in that sentence.
But as I mentioned yesterday, that doesn't help us. If we are trying to understand what these 19th century Mormon leaders were actually teaching and what they believed and wanted members to believe, if you're going to say that they include speculative information, it would help us a lot if the church would provide the list of what is speculative in nature. This is why we try to, as I said yesterday, we try to use quotations that are found in other sources as well, because if they are going to use a particular source in another publication, it seems pretty clear by using it that way that they believe that the quote that they are taking from the Journal of Discourses must be sound. Otherwise, I don't think they would use it.
Well, and I don't think you're ever going to find such a list, just like you'll never find a list with the Bible. The Bible is true only as far as it's translated correctly, according to Article 8. It's oftentimes used as, when I get in trouble and I don't like what it is, then I will go ahead and minimize it by saying, well, I don't know if I can really trust that, the accuracy of that or whatever else.
Well, I think what we have with the Journal of Discourse is another case of the Mormon Church wanting it both ways. They want their membership and the general public to believe that they have Latter-day prophets who are here by God getting information directly from the Almighty. Yet when we go back and we go see, well, what did they say? The Mormon Church today is embarrassed by some of the things that they said and what was believed back then by many members of the LDS Church. They don't like it, and so they say, well, it was speculative. Well, who are they to say that? And they'll say, well, yeah, but we have living prophets today. Well, are the living prophets today outright denouncing what was taught earlier? I don't see a lot of that. I don't see a lot of modern LDS leaders saying, well, what Brigham Young taught on this particular issue was false doctrine. They just don't do that. The closest I've ever seen anything like that ever happening was when Spencer Kimball, in a priesthood message, referred to the Adam God doctrine as false doctrine. He doesn't name Brigham Young personally, but he doesn't even call it a doctrine. He called it a theory. He used the word Adam God theory. It was a theory of, supposedly, I guess, that Brigham Young came up with. Now, Brigham Young never believed that. He never taught that. He taught it was a doctrine, and we're going to be talking about that when we look at Volume 1. But I think the Mormon Church is playing fast and loose with the facts when they try to downplay the significance, at least when it comes to how the journal was looked upon by members at the time they were being published.
And that's important. Additional information, as this article on the website continues, says the content of the Journal of Discourses was transcribed, sometimes inaccurately, and published between 1854 and 1886 in England. The compilation contains some statements of doctrine as well as other materials of interest to Latter-day Saints who live far from the center of the church, including speeches given for a variety of occasions, funeral addresses, reports from returning missionaries, prayers in the proceedings of a trial. The Journal of Discourses was produced under the guidance of those who transcribed the materials, including George D. Watt, David W. Evans, and George W. Gibbs.
Well, I think it's important that we look at the credentials of these people. And just saying it like that, you don't really know who these people are, but they were actually like secretary of the first presidency for over 50 years, I believe, was Mr. Gibbs. And the other man worked for the Deseret News. These are not slouches in Mormonism's past. They were very credible people who I'm sure only would want to produce the best available content they could. We don't get the impression at all that these were men who were sloppy in their careers, sloppy in their job description. It just makes it sound like they were just guys they grabbed off the street.
And once more, we don't see, going back into the 19th century, we don't see criticism of them, at least publicly. I know of nothing where they were claiming George D. Watt was doing this inaccurately. They all had the ability to make the changes there before things got printed, and
yeah,
they didn't.
Well, going back to who were these people, David W. Evans, as I mentioned, he was the associate editor of the Deseret News. You have George Gibbs. He was secretary of the first presidency for 56 years. Do you hold a job like that if you're not very good at what you do? I don't think so. Then also, according to the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, Volume 2, page 770, it says, in all, 12 people recorded sermons for the Journal of Discourses, including one of Brigham Young's daughters. Do you think that they would not want to have the best and the brightest recording these sermons? I would think they would.
Well, in the next paragraph, it says, skilled in the use of shorthand, George D. Watt had transcribed many conferences and sermons for the Deseret News, and so he's done this before. He received little pay for his work. Since the Deseret News was not generally available outside the United States, Watt proposed to Brigham Young the idea of publishing these materials on a subscription basis. Such a plan would make the materials available to more saints and allow Watt to earn a living with his work. President Brigham Young supported the plan, and a letter from the First Presidency was included in the first volume encouraging church members to cooperate in the purchase and sale of this journal. That, there you go. It was even encouraged for them to buy this.
And let me just say, not only were they encouraged to buy it back then at the time, but as late as 1963, Deseret Book actually was encouraging members of the Mormon Church to buy copies of the journal. Let me very quickly, this was an ad that was in the Deseret News on March 21st, 1963, and this is what it said. Every Latter-day Saint should take this opportunity of owning the written words of remarkable teachings from the LDS pulpit to the clear and vigorous exposition of Latter-day Saint doctrine is added the unmistakable authority of divine inspiration. That's what Deseret Book was saying about the Journal of Discourses in 1963.
Sounds like they didn't want them to buy it, huh?
Oh, yeah, really. They were certainly encouraging members to buy it. So why does the church today have such a different view on the Journal of Discourses?
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. You just listened to today's broadcast, A Viewpoint on Mormonism. But did you know that you can hear past editions of more than 100 shows at your convenience? The Viewpoint on Mormonism podcast is available on the internet and will help you learn more about the LDS religion. Feel free to listen on your computer or download to your favorite listening device. Just go to mrm.org and click on the box that says On Air. All of our shows are here, so visit mrm.org today. Looking for a book on Mormonism? The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore in Salt Lake City carries the largest selection of Christian books on Mormonism, including titles such as Mormonism, Shadow or Reality, and Mormonism 101. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is also a great place to get your questions answered. Open Mondays through Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturdays from 1 to 5. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is located directly across from the Spring Mobile Ballpark at 1358 South and West Temple.